Today's opening tip, LeBron James had 29 points in the first half of the Lakers' win last night. But Ramona, was LeBron more impressive on offense or defense in game three?
Defense, 4 blocks in the third quarter. If he plays like that, then there's no excuse for anyone else to not play defense on the Lakers.
Ramona stole my answer.
Don't worry, I mean, there's going to be other answers available later in the show. You're good.
No,
you're good.
That's exactly my answer. Defense is amazing.
Welcome to The Jump, guys. I am Rachel Nichols. I'm back in the NBA bubble, joined remotely indeed by our front office insider, Amin Alhassan, our NBA insider, Ramona Shelburne. And guys, coming up, Brooklyn Nets head coach Steve Nash is going to join The Jump. We will talk about his decision to join the Nets, his relationship with their 2 superstars. It's a little bit later in the show. First, though, there is no sugarcoating how the Bucks season ended last night. A Milwaukee team with the soon-to-be 2-time MVP and legit championship aspirations was bounced from the playoffs in the second round by a 5 seed, and that is not okay. And I get all the qualifiers. Yes, the Heat are a particularly good lower seed. And yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo spent the latter part of the series dealing with a sprained ankle that knocked him out completely by game 5. And he clearly really did want to play. We saw him putting up shots in warm-ups, even though he had absolutely 0 lateral movement. We saw him shouting instructions from the bench, even becoming the world's tallest ball boy at halftime as he rebounded for his teammates. Still, no one should kid themselves. By the time Giannis's injury became a real factor in this series, it was already too late for Milwaukee, who now will face a tidal wave of questions about what went wrong and what's next. The biggest is, of course, about, yes, Giannis, who is now eligible for a Supermax extension. It's the same position Anthony Davis was in with New Orleans last summer, and it's also exactly the situation the Supermax was invented for. Remember, the NBA's owners came up with the Supermax after Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City, quote, for nothing in free agency. It's designed to let teams re-sign their own superstars a year ahead of them going on the open market with more money than any other team can pay them. Bottom line, it's a bribe, plain and simple. And the idea is that if the player doesn't take it, then the team has a whole season of warning where it could trade the player and at least get something in return. Again, see Pelicans, comma New Orleans, who made out pretty well by trading Davis to LA. Except here's the difference. In that situation, Davis did ask for the trade. Giannis, well, he told Yahoo Sports last night he isn't going to do that. Here was his quote to Chris Haynes, quote, "It's not happening. That's not happening. Some see a wall and go in the other direction. I plow through it." Yano also said this at the presser. Take a listen.
Hopefully we can learn from this and, you know, get better as a team and come back. And hopefully we can build a culture in Milwaukee that for many years that we can come out here and compete every single year for a championship.
Giannis talking like that should certainly give Bucks fans some confidence, but it's important to note that it's one thing to not ask for a trade. It's another to say that he will actually sign the Supermax, and that's not a statement that Giannis has made. Now, for the past year, I've been making the point on this show that there is a third option here, because Giannis is still going to be eligible for that Supermax next summer. He could always decline to sign it now and instead throw the ball firmly back into the Bucks' court. Basically, give them another season to prove that he should stick with them. That would be a risk for Milwaukee, which would have to decide if it wants to gamble with the possibility of having him walk KD style next year. But it certainly may be the best option in a time when so much is so uncertain anyway, and it would give the Bucks a chance to better build around Giannis. Chris Paul, for one, has been floated in Bucks circles since Houston made him available last summer. Or Milwaukee could make a change at coach. Mike Budenholzer has an exceptional track record, but his track record also shows he is resistant to making significant adjustments once playoff time rolls around. Take a look at these numbers, because Milwaukee's ownership and management certainly will over the coming weeks. And I don't envy the Bucks' brain trust here. All of it is complicating. All of this is frustrating for a team that absolutely expected to be in the NBA Finals this year. Still, the facts are the facts. In the rarefied air the Bucks want to operate in, playoff success is the only thing that matters, and Milwaukee took a jarring step backward. If they want things to go differently in the future, there should be no sugarcoating. Change has to happen, and it has to happen soon. And with that, Amin, serving up some blame pie for us on the Bucks. So who do you think gets the first slice?
Oh yeah, let me get my napkin out because this is gonna be messy. First goes management. 10% slice there. They had the opportunity to keep a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, who absolutely would have helped in this series with his shooting and playmaking. They let him walk. When your championship window is only so yay big, you never know when it's gonna close. You can't make these types of decisions, even if you know it's gonna hurt down the line. All right, next slice. What else we got here? We got 20%. Ooh, the slices are getting bigger. This goes to my guy, Chris Middleton, and the rest of the Bucks kind of supporting cast. I put Middleton on there first because as an all-star, as an all-NBA player, he's got to find a way to be more aggressive out there, whether that's a conversation with his coach, his teammates, or himself. He's got to be the Chris Middleton that we saw in games 4 and 5 and not the ones in 1, 2, and 3. But also, the role players, you guys got to hit threes. That's the whole point of shooting threes, is to give Giannis the space he needs. The Bucks made less three-pointers and they shot worse than they did in regular season, and that was an issue. The bigger slice, 30%. Oh, Giannis, you knew it was coming for you, buddy. Everyone talks about Giannis needing to improve his three-point shot. That's fine, that's fair, but I want to see him improve his in-between game. Mid-range jumpers, step-backs, floaters, runners, jump hooks. Here's so much more to the game than dunks and threes for a star player. That's all right for the role player. They need to hit their threes. But Giannis can do so much more in improving his skill set to be a harder cover. And then finally, the biggest slice. You guys knew who was going to get it. Bud, this slice is for you. You know, Bud, you got to make adjustments. It's not about your original plan not being good enough. It's about respecting what your opponents are doing and adjusting to what they're doing to get out of their comfort zone and for you to get back into your comfort zone. Bud, I need Giannis to catch the ball off ball. I need him to get it on the move, on the catch. I need more involvement for the other role players so your offense isn't as predictable and your defense isn't as stale. Ladies and gentlemen, let me grab a napkin here. That's
very hot. Ramona, are you buying all this pie servings? What do you think?
You know what? I don't buy that Bud gets the biggest slice. I actually think it's Giannis. And Rachel, if you had him on the show right now to ask him that question, he would tell you the same thing. I mean, he has not improved his mid-range game, as Amin said. He shot 54% free throws, okay? It's not going to get it done as a star player in those four games. And I think that from what we've heard from him, okay, his quote to Chris Haynes says, you know, sometimes there's a wall in front of people and they go around it, I run through it. That's what he continues to try to do on offense. Mm-hmm. You can't just keep running through that wall.
Right.
Defenses know how to defend him, especially in a 7-game series, especially when coaches like Eric Spoelstra from the Heat, and I know Toronto felt the same way last year, they just build a wall and force him to either go around it or go through it. It doesn't work. He tried it last year. He kept trying it again this year. He's got to find a different attack on offense because it's going to keep happening in the playoffs. And I think Giannis, from everything I've heard from him, takes that responsibility on his own shoulders. And I think when he says, you know, I'm not ducking this, we have to get better, he's saying I have to get better.
Absolutely. And look, you bring up a good point about the Heat, what they did to him. Amin, Eric Spoelstra, obviously a great tactician, especially with adjustments in game. So I want to give them credit. They have advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since 2014. That was, of course, LeBron's final season down there. The team just continues to surpass expectations the rest of the NBA has for them. Now, they themselves, Jimmy Butler, Ramona, sat down with me before this bubble restart even got going and said, I think we can win a championship this year. I was like, you know, that's not what other people think. He goes, oh, yeah, but we can do it. Ramona, do you agree with him that that's the ceiling for this team, or do you think it's a little lower? Where are you on that?
I mean, it's a little high, but I got to be honest, Rach, like they like being in the bubble. I mean, you were there, so you can speak to this better than I can, but there's certain teams that you can just tell that they are not comfortable there. They don't like it. They miss their freedoms. They miss their families. They never quite adjust to playing basketball in the bubble. I think the Bucks would tell you that. Like, we just never saw the same team that we saw during the regular season down there in Orlando. I think the Heat love it there. I think Jimmy, with his awkward facial hair that he's not even even bothering to try to make look good. I think Goran Dragic, those are tough-minded guys. Like, they don't care about the conditions or the lack of fan support or the noise in the arena. They don't care about that. They seem like they've gotten closer as a team. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they come out of the East. I don't know that they can beat the Lakers or the Clippers. I've seen both of those games live during the regular season, and it just seemed like both LA teams had more talent than Miami. But the way they're playing, and the way the two LA teams who look like they're going to win in the West are playing, I wouldn't put anything past them at this point.
Well, Amin, I know you are the mayor of Heat Island, so this is a bit of a biased question, but what do you think the team's ceiling is?
Rachel, I thought you'd never ask. You know, I gotta get into my flow here, my vibe. I gotta get my Miami Heat Island jacket on. We're gonna put on some sunglasses real quick. Why not? A little cigar action. Not just for the look. I don't actually smoke, but why not a championship in Miami? Let me count the ways. Number one, the team that Ramona mentioned that are more talented. She's right. They are more talented. But they haven't shown it consistently at all through these playoffs or even through the bubble. They've been kind of lackluster, up and down. Number two, the Miami Heat just beat a great team that was more talented than them in the Milwaukee Bucks, and they did it pretty handily. Number three, this, what you just mentioned, Ramona, this is a business environment for the Miami Heat. Going into the bubble, I knew that they were one of the most disciplined teams. And without having to worry about outside distractions like family or fans or anything like that, this team is singularly focused. And finally, when you talk about a team that has elite defense and an offense that is unpredictable because it is unscripted, you've got guys cutting and moving, that's enough to put pressure on any team. I say, why not championship to the island?
That is amazing on all levels, Amin. And it is a business trip, I want to point out, for Jimmy Butler, not only to try to win a championship, but he's actually selling homemade coffee out of his room. $20 a cup, because he says, hey, these are NBA players, they can afford it. So really, he's doing business all over, both on and off the court. We will see how they go in the coming week or two, but wow, what a showing from the Miami Heat. Coming up, guys, we're going to also talk a little bit more Lakers, because LeBron had a block party in the bubble last night. In honor of that, we're going to take a look at LeBron's best playoff blocks next, right here on The Jump. Stick with us. La 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 la.
The Jump is brought to you by Dos Equis, a most interesting beer. Please enjoy responsibly.
Tried to jam and was rejected at the rim.
He blocked it with his middle finger.
You just got to keep fighting. Just play all basketball.
It's the championship DNA.
I'm bringing energy to the floor.
Leonard diving on the floor.
You can inspire your team without saying a word.
Kawhi just takes it away.
Just got to my spots and put up the shot with confidence.
And X, another intoxicating performance.
We got off the first round. Just one step closer to where you want to get to.
Let's check out today's Make or Miss, brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Make maturity. Tyler Hero coming up big down the stretch for Miami. Amin, was he the steal of the draft at number 13?
I mean, he's certainly looking like it. I do wonder, Rachel, how much of this playoff experience is going to be applicable to next year when there are fans in the crowd. Will it be the same? Will it be different for him? But he's playing tremendous. He's playing out of his mind.
I mean, it's hard to say he's a steal of the draft when Memphis got Brandon Clark, and then the Heat actually have Kendrick Nunn, who went undrafted.
Yeah.
And he's in the rookie conversation, rookie of the year conversation as well. But yeah, they really got a steal there at 13 because he looks like a player for years to come.
Oof. All right, Miss Balance, Rockets, Lakers. I want everyone to watch this sequence here, right? All right, so first, Anthony Davis hits the floor. Then we get Russ.
Yeah.
And LeBron after that. Ramona, what is going on here?
I just think everyone's trying to draw fouls. And I think this is that kind of series where everyone's trying to show how passionate they are about diving for loose balls. But Zach Lowe just did a 10-minute podcast on this, ranting about everyone just flopping on the floor
It reminds me of The Jerk with Steve Martin. He hates these cans. Like, there's a sniper in the building somewhere taking these guys down.
I mean, you know, I know you got to sell it, guys, but probably a line there. All right, make light work. AD had a huge night with 26, 15, and 6. He was 9 of 13 from the field. I mean, this is the Anthony Davis the Lakers need every night. How often do you think they're going to get him?
Well, hopefully pretty often now, right? All the play-play series are over. You mess around with your first round series with Portland. All right, you got them out of the way. Now this is the serious stuff. You want to finish up Houston as quick as possible because you want to be waiting for the Clippers on the other end.
It's like, Rachel, he just remembered he's taller than everyone. In game one, the Lakers had 40 points in the paint. Game two and game three, which they won, 54 and 56. And that's led by Anthony Davis, who is taller than everyone and can score in there.
And by the way, the Rockets are not done yet by any stretch. I mean, finish up. The Lakers are just up 2-1 in this series. Come on. Miss, gimmies. Guys keep trying LeBron. He keeps blocking their shots. Year 17, Ramona, but four more rejections last night. Should the Rockets consider pump faking here? Come on.
Well, I mean, here's the thing is when LeBron is playing like free safety out there, H, like that elevates the Lakers defense. And we forget defense is actually how the Lakers got here in the first place. That's why they were the best team in the West. And the reason everybody buys in is when your leader, LeBron James, is playing like that, there's no excuse for anybody else not to.
I feel bad for Austin Rivers because he actually did the right thing. He went up and under thinking that the rim would help give him some cover. Nope, not so much.
I feel bad for Austin Rivers because that happened to him while his dad was sitting in the building watching. So, you know.
No.
Come on. Doc's there.
Come on, Rachel.
Let's just be nice.
Too soon.
I'm just saying. All right, time to run it back. Play the music, please. I want to see LeBron's best playoff blocks of all time. Check it out.
What a great play by Joe Smith. Our triple team. We checked it by James. Our Houston's why no foul. James for three. Yes! What a display. Being put out here by LeBron James. At first, looking to set teammates up. And he has come out. He's hit his last four shots. It's Bedlam here in Cleveland. Curry blocked by James. Making a statement on both sides of the floor. Says to the two-time MVP, get it out of here. Not on my watch.
Here comes Rondo. He gets to the basket well. It's a matter of finishing. Oh, James pins it on the backboard.
LeBron on the weak side says, uh-uh. Not on my watch, young fella. Good block, cuffs it. My goodness, tremendous athleticism.
I do that in my backyard, by the way, fellas.
Four to shoot. Parker,
oh, spread the beat. Oh, what a block from James! Throws it back at Splitter, who is ready to dunk. The Heat have turned this into a blowout. Now taken by Iguodala. Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection.
Wow.
His third block of the game as we come up on a minute and a half remaining.
All right, a little taste of playoff LeBron, but I want to move on to his teammate, playoff Rajon Rondo. Excellent off the bench for the Lakers in game three, scoring 21 points, 8 of 11 from the field to go with 9 assists. For his career, guys, Rondo, I don't know how many times I can say it on this show, consistently improved his numbers across the board in the playoffs. Playoff Rondo is a thing. You guys can look at the numbers. Ramona, the question is playoff Rondo here to stay as the Lakers try to advance and go deeper here?
Oh, look, Rach, it depends on what your definition of playoff Rondo entails. Do they need him to score 21 points a game? I don't think he can keep that up. I don't think he needs to keep that up, though. Like, all they need for Rajon Rondo is to organize the offense when LeBron James is either on the court or taking a rest, run that second unit, and not be careless with the ball. That's all they need from him. If he can give them that, they really have something. But they don't need him to go 8 for 11. They don't need him to score 21 points. They can get that offense elsewhere.
You know, Rachel, whenever these teams acquire an old wily veteran, think of Rondo, obviously, in L.A., think of Iguodala out in Miami. The goal isn't for them to play like they played in their prime. The goal is, like Ramona said, for them to be a steadying influence for younger players who haven't been in this position before, to explain what's happening, and then to give us, if we're lucky, one or two of these games in the playoff. This is the Rondo game we got last night, and he gave it to him. Can he have another one? Maybe. Should we be counting on it? Absolutely not.
No, but I do think it's more than just giving advice or studying. That it's, you know, the timely assist. I think it's less about the accumulation of number totals and more about picking your spots at the right time, which he is able to do. And then on the side where you say, oh, let them know what's going on, that's certainly true, especially in a seven-game series. I got to tell you, especially having worked as a sideline reporter for a lot of these games, I have never seen anyone at court level who can tell what the opposing team is doing sometimes before they even do it, the way Rondo does and informs all his teammates of it. It's like having the answers to the test in advance. I have seen him tell opposing players, no, you're supposed to be over there, and he's always right. So that kind of thing, Rachel, can help a lot.
Rachel, I've seen coaches for fun call out a fake play, and Rondo stops at, that ain't a real play.
He is just, I mean, he's got an encyclopedic knowledge in the way he studies an opponent and studies film, and he obviously does not do that for 82 games of the regular season, but he absolutely does it in the playoffs. Frank Vogel praising his work ethic just last night, saying that even when he was away from the team injured, Rondo ground, he was grinding so much, he actually kind of worked out his back a little bit too hard. He is very eager to be here, prove himself. We're going to have to see how much more playoff Rondo we get. All right, I want to move on to the Thunder because they announced last night they have mutually agreed to part ways with Billy Donovan after five seasons. Now, sources told our Adrian Wojnarowski, the Bulls are expecting to have interest in considering Donovan for their franchise's head coaching position. But, I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that either have or are going to have open spots. Donovan, highly respected. I want to point out the Thunder did not get rid of him because they didn't like him or they didn't think he did a good job. Both sides were looking at the direction of the Thunder going forward, felt the team was going to be rebuilding for the next few years, and that's not the kind of team he wanted to coach. But he's leaving OKC with a lot of people having respect for what he's doing. What do you think there?
Yeah, Rachel, and some people might say that OKC would have been okay with him staying maybe a couple of years, and Billy decided maybe I got other better options on the table, which is why someone would walk away, because you feel like you have a better chance somewhere else. But no, I think Billy's a fine coach. I think what he showed this year is when he's got players who are willing to execute the game plan's not bad. He's pretty good. And so, you know, like you said, there's a bunch of options out there. I know we're going to talk about Indiana a little bit later in the show. Houston is a place that might have a coaching vacancy going forward, so maybe that might be a landing spot for him. I think Billy's got a bright future. And as far as what the Thunder need, you're absolutely right. This is, I know we think of Gallinari and Chris Paul, but this is an overwhelmingly young team. You think about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you think about Darius Bazley, you think about 18 bajillion picks that they're going to have in the next few years. This needs someone who can grow with this roster, grow with this organization. And I'm willing to throw out a name for you, Rachel. How about this? Kevin Ollie, former Oklahoma City Thunder player, former head coach UConn, won a championship there, well-respected by players in this league. I think Kevin Ollie would be perfect for this job.
Love that. You know, Ramona, you've got Philadelphia and New Orleans open, too, if Billy, you know, wants to put his hat in the ring there.
Look, I think this says more about what Oklahoma City's doing rather than what Billy Donovan did or didn't do in his time there. He was on my Coach of the Year ballot. I mean, I went Nick Nurse 1, Taylor Jenkins 2, Billy Donovan 3. He had a great year coaching. And I think it said everything that, you know, Sam Presti talked to reporters last night and he said, I brought a couple of beers into the office when we had our last meeting, him and Billy. And they just shared stories. Like, I think the idea is, they don't know where they're going to go in the next couple of years, but it signals that they are not going to carry the kind of veteran players like Chris Paul and maybe Steven Adams, some of the high-priced players that they've been carrying the last few years. They couldn't tell him, yeah, we're going to keep him. Yeah, we're going to keep trying to contend for the playoffs. They couldn't give him that answer. It doesn't mean that they're not. It's just right now, while everything is still undecided about next season, where we don't know if we're going to have fans next year, we don't know what day we're going to start, we don't know if we're going to be able to play in home sites or we have to do a bubble again. There's so much uncertainty over the revenues for next season. Oklahoma City is a small market franchise, just couldn't tell Billy Donovan what it was going to do. And he decided and they decided it was best to part ways and go their separate ways. But this is an amicable parting, as you're going to see in the NBA with a franchise and a coach.
And along those lines, it seems like a signal, too, that they're going to get aggressive about trying to get rid of that Chris Paul contract. And boy, did Chris put up sort of the best possible advertisement for himself this season. Remember last year when they acquired him over the summer, there was a feeling of, man, they're going to be stuck with that salary forever. We just talked in the first block of the show about the persistent rumors about the Bucks wanting him. We'll have to see if Chris Paul goes somewhere, but I would expect that this move with Billy Donovan to domino, you might see contracts like Chris Paul, Steven Adams, some of the bigger veteran contracts go over the next few months as well. We'll just have to see. All right, guys, coming up on this show, new Brooklyn Nets coach Steve Nash is going to join me to talk about how the job came about, his relationship with Brooklyn star players, and his expectations for the Nets next season. Spoiler alert, they're very high. You don't want to miss it.
This guy is the maestro.
Nash takes him off the dribble. Wrap around to Stoudemire. Amari from Nash. 21 assists for Steve Nash.
That's one of his trademark moves.
Oh, my. Cold-blooded.
That left hand, a lethal weapon for Steve Nash. Oh, did you see that?
A mesmerizing force of a handle.
Ooze from the crowd.
Does anybody make that pass better than Steve Nash?
No other player in the NBA.
He was a baller in his day, and now he is a head coach, two-time MVP, eight-time All-Star, Hall of Famer, and now Nets head coach Steve Nash. Welcome to The Jump.
Thanks for having me.
So nice to see you. You know, your hire surprised just about everyone. Please tell us, how did all of this come about?
Well, it's been a long process, very informal for me. You know, obviously playing 18 years in the league, always being super inquisitive, loving to challenge myself in new ways. It's been something that I've thought about in the back of my mind and gained momentum with that thought in the last couple of years. It was a moment in time where I thought of all the experiences that I've put together, of all the kind of note-taking I've done, that it's time for me to step out and take a challenge. So I asked Sean if he would put Sean Marks, if he would put my name in the hat, and here we are. But it's been a long, long process outside of this recent development.
Well, I have two questions off of that. First, how many notebooks must you have if you've been taking notes the whole time?
It's up here, Rachel.
I love it. So did you reach out to Sean Marks before anyone from the Nets contacted you, or did you and Kevin Durant talk about it first?
No, I reached out to Sean. You know, he and I have been friends, teammates, competitors for 20 years.
Yeah, for a long time.
So we've talked many, many times about many, many different things. But I was definitely the one that reached out to him.
Well, you do have two superstars ready to return next season, KD and Kyrie Irving. So what is your relationship like with each of those guys?
Well, Kevin and I have a great relationship. We spend a lot of time together. We worked together formally with the Golden State Warriors, but even prior to that, in my career and post-career, we've worked together on the court, developed a great relationship. So Kevin and I have a great history. Kyrie and I, you know, we have a friendship too. I haven't spent as much time with him, but when I retired, I spent a couple days in New York City. I admire him greatly as a person, things he's done for his communities. But as a basketball player, I'm in an incredible position to get to coach someone as talented as Kyrie Irving.
Point guard to point guard, you did work with the Warriors, as you mentioned, as a player development coach. What was your biggest takeaway from that time, other than, I assume, just everything Steve Kerr did the opposite, because he has not been successful at all?
I was glad you say that. I didn't want to crush him on national TV here, but
I know.
You know, it was incredible. I mean, obviously, to work with great players, you know, the Steph, Clay, Draymond, Kevin, down the line, you know, so many people. Steve Kerr obviously speaks for himself, his staff. Bob Myers, to watch an organization win and to win up close and to see how they operate was invaluable training and experience for me. My relationship with Steve goes back a long time. He's always been a confidant and an advisor to me, always kind of mentored me in an unassuming way, whether he knew it or not. And so to get to work with him up close and see that in person was definitely very valuable to me.
Now, there was some criticism of the Nets hiring you. There's so much attention now, rightly so, on giving people of color opportunities. There's critics who have said that you, quote, skipped the line for this opportunity. What is your response to having heard all that?
Well, they're both valid discussions. You know, I mean, I think skipping the line, and frankly, I did skip the line. You know, there's a lot of people that are grinding, trying to make a career for themselves as coaches. I think this is a little unique in that I led NBA teams for almost two decades. So very few people perhaps can say that they had that opportunity or perspective. But, you know, I did, and I have to own that. And, you know, I'll have to catch up in many ways and grow. I think I have a unique perspective, like I said, but I definitely have a lot to learn as well, and I have to have a great support system and build a team together. So that is, you know, that's one side of the debate. The other side, you know, look, this is a terrible time. We're realizing more and more that there's great injustice in our communities. You know, I, as a white man, whether we want to admit it or not, we benefit from white privilege. You know, we do, and we have to
Absolutely.
Admit that, own that. We don't have to pay for the sins of the people that came before us, but we can make a huge impact on the future. So for me, I'm sensitive to the topic. I'm a big ally and supporter for racial justice, for equality, and I want to be here and I want to support not only the great work that the Tsai family is doing, the pledge they've made within the organization and in the community to make change, a very meaningful and incredible pledge, but also the Coaches Association, who have been, I think, great leaders. You know, my college teammate Lloyd Pierce has been leading that in many ways. Incredibly proud of him, and I want to be here for as an ally and a component of that fight for what's right. You know, it's just right and wrong, and there's no room for inequality. And we may not fix it all at once, but we can make change. And together, we have to, you know, follow the size lead, follow the coaches lead, and I'll be an ally in all those fights.
Well, there's going to be a huge microscope, as you knew, when taking this job, Steve, doing all of those things, because the expectations for this Nets roster, with it now in the shape it is, a lot of people see this as a title-contending team. What are your expectations for your first year?
Well, I think that's where we should be looking. You know, I think we have the talent, we have the culture, organization, fundamentals and foundation that compete for everything. So, you know, I'm not Babe Ruth pointing this right now, but I think our expectations are high. Would that be the kiss of death for a rookie coach? Cup championship on day one. But, you know, we have to push ourselves.
You could say not one, not two, not three. That's been done before.
Yeah. We you know, we have high expectations, and we want to build and frame everything we do on being our best. And if we're at our best, you know, I think that we want to believe that we can contend in a way.
Absolutely, Steve. Well, I got to tell you, thank you so much for joining us. I know that, you know, this has been such a busy and crazy week. I also know that if anyone in Brooklyn wants soccer lessons in addition to basketball coaching, this is going to be a fantastic opportunity for all of that. Really best of luck, Steve. This is going to be so much fun to watch you go.
Thanks, Rachel. Take care.
Coming up, the Celtics are 3-2 against the Raptors, but will they close out the series tonight? That's coming up next on The Jump.
I know that I set a high goal. They say don't get your hopes high.
It's the playoffs. You got to come together as a team.
Let's lock in and get the best shot. Come on, y'all.
This young man is only 22 years of age. His talent is scary.
Bullseye again.
Doing a good job of making the right play.
As soon as I throw it, go.
And moving the ball well and playing to our strength. Toronto's a great defensive team. You got to be ready.
Good! Jason Tatum is here.
Welcome back to The Jump. We absolutely cannot wait for that game 6 tonight between Jason Tatum Celtics, the defending champion Raptors. We're going to break that down in a second, but first, I do want to shed some light on something the Boston Celtics are doing off the court. On Tuesday, the franchise unveiled a $25 million commitment over the next 10 years to fight racial injustice and focus on social issues in the Black community of Greater Boston. Now, this is above and beyond the $1 million per year for 10 years that the NBA is having each team donate to their fund. Some of the initiatives the Celtics Fund envisioned are doing creating early education centers for low-income families, early detection for diseases like diabetes and breast cancer, assisting juvenile offenders with job development skills, education, just an all-around approach. It's so impressive and hopefully sets the bar for other NBA owners to follow. Would love to see that. All right, switching gears, guys, to the action tonight. The Celtics just one win away from advancing back to the Eastern Conference Finals. But that one win will have to come against the defending champions. Amin, do you expect the Celtics to be able to close out the Raptors, including the very stubborn Kyle Lowry, tonight in Game 6?
Yeah, Rachel, you know, as the great Rudy Tomjanovich once said, don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion. Having said that, I don't think Rudy T saw Game 5. Because that's making me feel real, real shaky about the hearts of these champions. Now, I think the Celtics close it out, and here's why. I just don't think the Raptors are there yet. And I know that sounds weird because they won the championship last year, but Pascal Siakam is playing a completely different role from what he played last year. It's a lot different when you're the scouting report rather than an afterthought on the scouting report. And he's going to get through it, but he needs time to adjust, and I just don't think they've got that time right now against the Celtics team.
Rachel, you know, Nick Nurse basically called out Pascal Siakam at his press conference the other day, basically saying, you know, I don't know what's wrong with, you know, why he hasn't played the way he did during the regular season. He was great during the regular season, great during last year's playoffs. He just hasn't been the same guy. I mean, that was a direct call out of your star saying, we need more from you. And I think, you know, I do think the Raptors have a chance here. I think Nick Nurse will make some adjustments because what Boston has been doing, especially so in Game 5, is they focused on keeping the Raptors out of the paint and making it really tough on Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet to get into the paint and score. From inside 10 feet, the Raptors are shooting 48% in this series. From inside 4 feet, 56%. Both of those would be the lowest in the league in the NBA, lower than Charlotte, which had the lowest ranking in both of those measures. I mean, they've just done a great job of keeping the Raptors out of what they like to do best.
Yeah, remember, Pascal Siakam didn't even start playing organized basketball till he was 17. We will see what he does tonight. All right, I want to look over to where things stand out west. The Lakers and Clippers both up 2-1 in their respective series. Tonight, we get Game 4 between the Clippers and Nuggets. After LA won Game 3, Patrick Beverley said this about Nikola Jokic. He dropped member 32, 12, and 8. Pat Bev said he presents the same thing Luka Doncic presents, a lot of flailing. He puts a lot of pressure on the refs to make the right calls. Well, here is Denver coach Mike Malone's response to Mr. Beverley.
Well, I mean, I don't listen to Patrick Beverley a whole lot. If Kawhi Leonard was talking, maybe I might listen to it. You know, Kawhi's a great player. So I'm not really sure what game Patrick is talking about or looking at. But, you know, I really don't, you know, warrant and give too much attention to that.
Okay, then, Ramona, what do you make of that back and forth?
Dang, that was some shade, Rach. I mean, usually head coaches don't necessarily engage in that, but I kind of think that's how you have to be with Patrick Beverley. He's just going to keep talking. So you need your players to tune him out as well. My favorite part of the whole thing, though, is when Royce Young, you know, our reporter, yes, asked Nikola Jokic to respond to Patrick Beverley's comments. He said, how do you define flailing? And Royce, very quick on his feet, said, you know, throwing your hands in the air and trying to draw a foul. He's pretty good on his feet. And Jokic, you know, nicely pointed out, well, you know, he shot more free throws than our whole team. So, I think that was Denver's entire way of responding.
There's a couple of things at play here, right? One of them is, I love how Patrick Beverley made this comment while wearing a Real Madrid jersey, talking about the greatest player in Real Madrid history in Luka Doncic. But the other thing is, Patrick Beverley's calling other people floppers? Hello? Wait, what? Hold on, this Patrick Beverley? That one? Is that the Patrick Beverley who called people floppers? I mean, look at this. What is that? If that's not flailing, how about this one? Ah, sniper in the building. Look at his face. Look at the recoil. What are we doing here? Who are you? And by the way, it's funny that him and Marcus Smart would be involved in that altercation right there. Smart, also a world-renowned flopper. Look, there are a lot of people who can make arguments about flailing and selling calls. There's two things to remember. One is that Jokic and Doncic and Harden and a lot of these other great players are drawing the fouls. They're just embellishing the contact. And two, you gonna talk about flopping?
Look, it's part of the game. So are these back and forth. I love it. That's all I can say. All right, stick around, guys. After this break, we're gonna talk about what Giannis should do next. Join us. You say we only boys and girls. We've got an amazing NBA playoff doubleheader on ESPN. Raptors Celtics, then Clippers Nuggets. NBA Countdown kicks it off 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific. And then on Sunday, WNBA action. The Aces taking on Breanna Stewart and the first place Storm, 3 Eastern on ABC and the ESPN app. And now it's crunch time here on The Jump. Adrian Wojnarowski tweeting, the league has informed teams of a potential revised 2020 NBA draft date, November 18th, sources telling ESPN. That is a switch, of course, from October 16th, which was the original estimate. So, Amin, how does this impact front offices a month later?
Well, I think it gives you more time for not only evaluation, but also time to talk to these prospects. Obviously, we're not getting many of these guys in person, so Zoom calls is all we have. So, you know, just a little bit more evaluation time, given that we're are hamstrung in the evaluation tools we have at our disposal.
Yeah, also maybe a little bit more of a salary cap idea. We will have to see. All right, we're almost out of time, but I do want to circle back on something I mentioned at the top of the show. Giannis asked by Chris Haynes just moments after the Bucks were bounced out of the playoffs about the idea of asking for a trade going into the final year of his contract. And Giannis said, quote, it's not happening. That is not happening. So, Ramona, what do you think will happen with Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Nothing in that statement rules out him deciding not to sign a Supermax. I mean, that's really the only question that matters. He doesn't have to ask for a trade, but if he doesn't agree to the Supermax contract extension this offseason, then the Bucks have the decision to make whether he asks for a trade or not.
Yeah, and they will have to decide if they want to try one more season of building around him and hope that convinces him to stay. But of course, the gamble if they do that is that he could walk right out the door. He could, of course, also just sign the Supermax that he's offered. I mean, do you think that there's a chance he'll do that this offseason?
I think right now, asking him that question after that loss is like asking college players after they lose in a tournament, are you going to come back next year? And they always say, yes, I'm coming back. But 3 weeks later, they declare for the draft. Same thing here. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't think he knows what he's going to do. But the important thing to recognize is that the Bucks are a great organization. This isn't Anthony Davis leaving the Pelicans. So there is a real decision for him whether to stay or perhaps move on.
And he's talked a lot about how much he loves living there, loves the team. He said that again last night, talked in the future tense about Milwaukee. So we will just keep an eye on that. All right, Justin at the buzzer. Amin, my friends, you fell off your chair earlier in the show while you were trying to get your Heat Island props. And the viewers didn't see it because our amazing directorial staff saved your bacon. But what's the fun in that, Amin? So the producers and I decided we're going to have to show everyone. Are you okay? Did you get a concussion? Ooh. What happened?
You know, when we had the thing with Russell Westbrook and Harden and LeBron all falling, I thought you guys were going to clip it in there. When we passed that moment, I said, whoo, dies the bullet. Not yet.
Ramona, I would like to compliment you
there.
For
We've
staying
all been
upright
there,
through the entire show.
We just
show.
Normally don't actually fall.
Apparently, the bar here at the jump is very low, and you have hopped over it, and Amin, not so much. So, all I got. That's it for today, guys. The Jump is back on ESPN tomorrow.